What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the You Know Ball podcast. I am your host, Troll Bro Dude, and from a remote, undisclosed location, boots on the ground, we have Sam recording from New York City. What's going on in New York, Sam? Why are you up there?
Well, you know, first of all, the only way that we can have justice is if we have freedom. I'm here to protest a high-profile arrest that unlawfully occurred earlier today here in New York. You'll notice I'm a little sunburned. NYPD, were not letting us close. Let me just say that some very high-powered representatives in the U.S. were present, rubbing elbows with us. We had a huge chance to, you know, really make our voices heard. This is someone who's been a huge... figure in sort of advancing all sorts of different topics. He's been a huge ally to football players, and, you know, has even gone out of the way to feed them burgers at some of the highest levels of governance. So I don't want to say more than that because I might get in trouble. I did have to kind of bob and weave my way out of there. I am on a list. This is like another activity. I did another activity early in 2021 that already kind of had me on like some lists about this. But, you know, it was great to get out there and just like let my voice be heard. So, you know, I apologize to the, you know, the YKB listeners that I'm, you know, if audio quality is bad, that, you know, I am on the road. But I wasn't going to miss this for the world.
Of course. Yeah. This is more important than anything. Honestly, you know, having a presence in New York City on a day like today, as you said, 2 years after you had, boots on the ground in the, let's just say the Northern Virginia region, the DMV.
Yeah, like Southern Maryland, I'd say, like somewhere in there, yeah. Depending on how you want to, like, cut that out. And let me just say, there were fatalities. Like, so I'm very happy to, like, be here.
So lucky that you're still here. for anyone who's watching the podcast for the first time, Parody Satire.
Parody Satire. This is a joke.
Oh, Jesus Christ. But today we are going to get into a bunch of different stuff, including the new CBA. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the Sixers, Bucks, and Celtics because a lot has happened in the past few days and people wanted to get our thoughts on some games that occurred and also potentially my thoughts on Anna Nicole Smith's wedding that she had before she passed away. And then also we will talk about later in the episode, we'll talk about the Warriors because why not? But before we get into that, let's get into some... All right, let's see if we can do a playoff draft. I'll see if this even works for Sam. Since Sam is on mobile right now, we'll do a screen share. We'll see if not, we'll just hop over to actually, you know what? Forget this. We need five more people. This is not going to work. So we'll just do the, we'll pull up the pick 'em and we will do some pick 'em. The Sixers and the Celtics are actually playing a game tonight that really doesn't matter that much for either team. It feels like this game really only mattered if the Sixers beat the Bucks, which they obviously didn't. And since they didn't beat the Bucks, the Sixers are pretty much locked into the three seed as long as they don't lose out in their last four games and the Cavs don't win out in their last three games. And the Celtics are pretty much locked into the two seed unless the Bucks lose two of their last four games. So it does feel like this game really isn't going to matter all that much for seeding purposes. They're pretty much on a crash course for a second round matchup right now, assuming that there isn't any sort of major injuries or crazy shit that happens. So,
yeah, I mean, I think the way I'm thinking about this game tonight, you know, is if the Celtics were to lose to the Sixers, it probably doesn't mean anything. But if the Celtics would beat the Sixers, you know, it's probably a good indicator of like what's to come in the playoffs. If I had to
I mean,
if I had to choose, what it means.
No, your unbiased opinion. It means.
Well, I've learned from Bucks fans. You know, it's you can rest guys during the Pacers game, and then if you lose, it's five games in 7 nights. they were really worried about that game. So
look,
it doesn't matter.
Giannis and Drew needed to play big minutes so that they could stat pad for all NBA against the Halliburton-less Pacers.
We'll get into that later for the awards voting stuff, because I have some thoughts on that when we talk about the CBA.
Let's get it. Okay, so for now, last time I once again allowed you to reverse jinx on the podcast, although you did say that the Bucks were going to lose that game. You said that you felt that the Celtics were going to win, but you said that Jason Tatum was going to go diaper mode, and he didn't. Yeah. He had an amazing game.
It wasn't great for the pre-show picks.
We did hit on the Giannis block. It was just Tatum in three quarters blew away.
Like two quarters.
Yeah.
Had what he needed. So.
By halftime, I was like, in the first quarter, I felt great about it. By the third quarter, I was like, oh no, this is going poorly.
Well, because I thought it was going to be a close game.
Yes.
If he had gone diaper mode, it would have been a close game. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't anticipate him putting up, overtime stats worth in three quarters.
Yeah,
and also the Celtics winning by 40 points or whatever it was. So 41. a little bit of a mulligan on that one, but maybe you guys should just fade our picks is what I'm taking from this.
Yeah,
because we're gonna pick from the Celtics and Sixers picks tonight. I'm actually gonna, and I'm not even trying to reverse jinx it. I'm gonna go.
Sorry, I'm getting close to looking at it. I think higher on the Embiid free throw attempt. Our free throws made.
Okay, so 9.5 though. That's 9.5 made.
Yeah,
not taken. 9.5 made.
I think he averages like 11 against the Celtics.
I went lower on his points, and I'm genuinely not trying to jinx him. I genuinely think that between the injury that. Mm. He's kind of been battling through recently, between the fact that, his quotes have kind of been like, these games aren't going to be like 100% full throttle effort, because we kind of know where we're settled in the standings right now. I'm going to stick with my gut here and go lower on this. I do believe he's hit higher than this outcome right here, which is 31.5 in two games against the Celtics this year. I think in the second and third game, he hit higher on both of those. I know the first game he hit lower because it was one of his worst games of the year. Harden's actually been playing well against the Celtics. He struggled in the last game. Is there anyone from the Celtics that you have a good feeling about tonight? For like Derek White's rebounds is like 4. Horford always makes a bunch of threes against us, it feels like.
Is it Smart? What are the options for Smart? Smart usually has pretty good games against the...
So Sixers. Smart right now has 11.5 points, 5 assists, 2.5 rebounds, 16.5 points and assists, or 19.5 rebounds, assists, and points.
I don't really like any of those, to be honest.
I'm gonna go. I think we should go higher on the Horford points.
Yeah, that feels he's gonna get open threes.
He's gonna get open threes because you guys are Rob isn't playing. You guys are gonna go 5 out. And we know that when the Sixers and the Celtics play, they love to keep Embiid near the paint. And Horford is just going to get open threes, and he's probably going to make the Sixers pay. It's in Philly. He loves a little bit of revenge against the Sixers. I still think there's a little bit of bad blood on both sides there. So I'm going to go lower on Embiid's points at 31.5 and higher on Horford's points at 9.5. This genuinely is not me. I don't care about the outcome of tonight's game. So I'm genuinely not trying to jinx them here, but if you put 15 on that on Underdog, you can get a payout of 45. So, get 3 times your money back. Use the promo code SLOP. That's SLOP on Underdog. And you can support the program as we roll into the playoffs. We'll be doing some once Sam's going to be here in Philly in a few days. So maybe we'll do a draft in person in a few days when you are actually here in Philly. And we will continue doing that as we get closer to the playoffs. So sign up for Underdog right now. You can do baseball, basketball, all that fun stuff. So, Sam, with the CBA, do you want to talk about the All-NBA stuff first? Because I think that's the most interesting.
That's like the biggest one in just in terms of like it being a total non-problem.
Sure.
And I think that I think that this is something where I think the leadership of the players' union might have something to do with some of this too. You know what I'm saying?
Like, because Jaylen Brown's part, like,
well, I just mean in terms of like, because what this hurts is, you know, what this essentially does is it creates more possibility for more guys to make all NBA, you know, because like this thing is always spread very thin. I don't think this is actually going to change load management or anything like that. Like what the, you know, what their stated goal was of like, you know, kind of making this return to Iron Man product, you know, because the implication here is that the players are fucking faking it. Which is just like, you know, not true. Like this sport, they cover more ground than ever. Guys used to have shorter careers. And the league are the ones that play fucking 82 games. So the schedule's too long. It's been too long. You know, they added like technically one game for two teams with some of the changes to like the NCAA tournament and some of that stuff,
which is so crazy. Actually, the one thing I will give Bill credit for on this is that he was kind of spitting when he was talking about we need to have less games. We all know that this is the solution.
Yes.
Everybody knows, but no one wants to give up an inch because the owners and honestly the players, because the players know that they'll get more. They get a large piece of the pie as well. I understand why they're not opposed to a shorter season as well. But from a general product standpoint, if your goal is to make the NBA a more watchable product, you need to cut the games. There's 82 games right now. It's way too many. Guys get hurt. I mean, I think that we've been seeing it recently down the stretch of this season. If anything, guys are pushing it too much, and they're getting hurt as they have played a good chunk of the season. Guys like Julius Randle, who has been playing every single game basically, hurts his ankle the other night and is now out until at least the playoffs. And we still continue to see this. Now, what you're talking about specifically is the 65-game requirement to win awards and to get all NBA, right?
Yeah. And also, there was more reporting today about that because everyone thought, well, okay, you just bring a guy in for a minute and sub him out.
At the first. It's not going to count.
That's not going to count now. You need to play at least 20 minutes.
Okay.
But that's the new reporting from today. So
we'll have a lot of Kawhi situations like the other night where he played most of the first half and then sits out the second half.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It just changes the incentive structure. It's a stupid fucking rule that is like not. I guess the thing that makes me so mad about this is because it's not really about it being a bad rule. It's about how the media was kind of played to turn this into a problem.
Yeah.
You know, and the owners correctly identified that, you know, media like to complain about what an awkward situation it is for them to dictate guys' money. And, you know, because when they, you know, whatever media say, they want to be friends with the players. This is nerds and jock shit. You know what I'm saying? Like they want to, you know, at least be on good terms with them. That's understandable. Like who would choose being on bad terms with someone you have to see at work every day? Like that's not, you know. A lot of people aren't wired like that. That said, it's also your job. You know, like this is sports media. It's a very stupid job on its face. Like you're essentially like reporting on like kayfabe. So the fact that you have like one part of your job that causes like a little bit of animosity, stick to your guns. Like have a line in the sand, draw it. And like, if you get yelled at by everyone, I'm sorry, it comes with the territory thing. Like, if the thing about sports media that just drives me crazy is you and I both know a lot of guys, because we talk about them all the time, who really know their stuff, who would do great as media guys, just in terms of like X's and O's, but do not, who would absolutely say to somebody's face, hey, you stuck this year. I'm not going to vote you all NBA. And not have to like couch that in anything. There are people who like, you know, kind of will do this job. And I think that media members, as they stand right now, the owners kind of tactfully played them not wanting to have an awkward conversation about them to play up that this is the load management is an untenable situation. You know, there is all of these things, just basically to strong arm the Stars into playing more games, because that's what this was really about. It's about strong arming the Stars into playing in games that do not fucking matter. And everybody knows that they don't matter.
I mean, we've talked about this before. It's kind of, it's part of this ring culture thing that has been created by the media, that the only thing that matters is championships. The only things that matters is accomplishments in the playoffs. And then when the players try to save their bodies so that they don't break down over the course of a season, they're criticized. So yeah. It's like, you can't really have it both ways. You can have it either the regular season matters and we will cherish those who are playing as many games as possible for the regular season and we won't care as much about the playoffs, or we will put the playoffs on a pedestal and we'll acknowledge that the regular season doesn't matter as much and it's fine when players are trying to rest themselves, like Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, even, you know, I would say to a lesser extent guys like Joel Embiid, because it does feel like Joel's body genuinely, he's trying to drag himself to the finish line right now, is what I should say. It's not to say that guys like Kawhi or Jimmy, I mean, Kawhi definitely has knee issues, but guys like Jimmy who have admitted in public that they don't really try until after the All-Star break, you know, that's fine as well. If your prerogative is to have playoff success and try to get as far as you can in the playoffs, and you think that preserving your body for the end of the season is the best way to do that, that's fine with me. You know, I think all of us want the players to play as much as possible. I think that all of us want the players to put on the best product possible. And the only way that that's ever going to happen is not this awards thing. It's eliminating games. And it is making it so that this schedule is not so insanely jam-packed. And we make fun of teams. We talked about the Sixers schedule. We joked about the Bucks schedule. But these schedules are genuinely insane sometimes, especially the second half of this season, where after football season is over, because by the way, they don't play a lot of games on Sundays during football season, which is a good chunk of the season. And then they also don't want to interfere with March Madness. They don't want to interfere with MLB opening day. There are so many things that they're constantly dancing around with the schedule because they're so focused on getting viewers and ratings that they are willingly sacrificing players' health by doing back-to-backs, 5 games in 8 days, all these crazy things in the second half of the schedule when there are more eyeballs on the sport. So once again, the only thing that will really change this is less games and a schedule that is more flexible, a schedule that is not so demanding of the players. If they played 65 to 70 games in a season, I guarantee you that there would not be as many injuries. I guarantee you there would be not as many load management days. I guarantee you that players would genuinely care, but we're never going to get to that point because no one wants to admit that. And another thing on this is I have written down here is the one guy that has been used a lot is Joel Embiid as the example of why we're using positionless basketball for the All-NBA teams now. So in addition to the 65 games played thing, there's also the positionless basketball element of it, which is because Embiid has missed first-team All-NBA the last 2 years with the positions, that is unfair to Embiid because he's been the second-best player in the regular season or at worst the third-best player. And because of that, he should at least make a first-team. First off, this is only the second year in Joel's career where he's going to play 65 games. As he gets older, the likelihood of him actually benefiting from this is pretty much non-existent. I would be shocked. As I said, I genuinely think he's trying to meet that threshold right now just so that he can basically beat the allegations in terms of, because then he's going to end up playing around the same amount of games as Jokic and Giannis. Whereas when I watch the games, it feels as though he's not 100% himself ever since he's had this injury that happened a week or two ago. And my point on this is that Joel himself is not going to benefit from this. And then my second point on this is that I feel as though the positionless element of it, that has to be added if you're going to tie contracts to the All-NBA. It just has to be, because there are going to be players that are missing from. We should just get rid of that concept, is my whole thing. In my opinion, that should be removed. I think that that should be up to the teams. I think that should be up to the players that are negotiating. I think that, like, the Supermax shit and everything that we've talked about with the Supermax, I don't think you should have to, like, if the Celtics wanted to give Jaylen Brown the Supermax today, they should be allowed to do it. Yeah. It doesn't benefit anyone here that he has to make an All-NBA, because we know that he's at worst a near All-NBA player.
So, well, let's get to that, because I think that's the other big thing about, you know, I think that's the other consensus about this CBA thing I agree with is it takes the focus of last CBA and doubles it. And the focus of that last CBA was broke small market, like defending the broke small market teams and giving them mechanisms to look their players in the eye and say, look, we're paying, we just can't hire, you know, like, and that's the idea. And I just think I guess what's insane about this is, like, there is revenue sharing. There is tax sharing, like with the repeater tax, like there is money out there. Like, you're literally, I don't know, like, we're talking about billionaires, right? We're not actually talking about cities, you know what I'm saying? We're talking about people who are business partners. I know that, like, these teams opened up the books and it showed that, like, all these teams are losing money. I'm sorry, that's bullshit. There's not, like, rich guys, I don't care how much of a dick swinging contest it is, they don't hold on to things that, like, lose money for, like, years and years at a time. Like, maybe for a little bit, maybe they'll make, like, a splurge purchase. Like, they're making money somewhere, whether that is in the valuation of the franchises, which is always going up. You know, maybe they take a little bit of a bath in operations cost. These guys are still banking on selling these teams for $4 billion after they bought them for $500 million. And they're right. You know, that's usually a pretty good bet. Especially in a small market, you can directly threaten your fan base with leaving. Use that pressure to, you know, get the Wisconsin legislature to, like, build you a new stadium or whatever. Whatever the fuck.
It's good for the local economy.
Yeah, the local economy, like, you know, basically steal money legally from taxpayers. So I guess it's just this my thing, you know, and this goes to, you know, we saw them harden the cap at a line. Everyone seems to agree that that's, like, a pretty, like, decent change. I don't think that's going to, like, really change the spending so much. And there are some player friendly options that are in there, like, you know, loosening the extension rules, I think is probably a good change. I think
well, they made it so that you can extend for more money. Like, for example, Jaylen Brown could get extended after this season for more money, which makes sense. And I think we all agree that that's a good thing.
It like never really made sense for that. It was like kind of to encourage player movement, you know, like, and now there's too much player movement. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause like, well, the last CBA was about, like, how do we stop fucking Kevin Durant from going to the Warriors again? What was the name of the game last CBA? This CBA is about how do we put a gun in the back of our star players and make them play their Orlando Magic Thursday game? And how do we, like, and how do we protect the Memphis Grizzlies from, like, having to pay Ja Morant $40 million and getting them to pay him at least in 35 instead.
It's, look, all this is broke boys. I don't talk to broke boys. It's literally all broke boy, whiny, bitchy, cheap ass fucking billionaires who are mad that the Clippers and the Warriors are basically taking advantage of the fact that they have more money than God, which gives them a competitive advantage. Yes. But also, every owner could spend the way that they can spend.
Like, yeah.
The large majority of these owners that are crying broke could do this if they wanted to. They're babies. They're little babies who do not want to actually pony up the money to keep their teams together. And they're looking for ways to penalize teams that want to spend more on their players, because there are limiting things like the non-tax level the tax level MLE that helped the Warriors sign Dante DiVincenzo, for example, They're looking for ways
to sign Gallinari with it, which could have been more impactful if he hadn't torn his ACL. Like
exactly. Yeah. Joe Ingles with the Bucks. Like,
yeah,
it's not to say that these are things that make or break a team, but when you're trying to build a team for an 82 game season, you need to look to get as much of a competitive advantage on teams on the margins. Guys like Ingles and DiVincenzo have been huge for their teams this year because when their stars are out, they can fill in and they can help them stay competitive. Now, look, maybe they won't make a massive swing on the finals, but like if Gallinari had been healthy, who knows? Maybe the Celtics win another game or two, and then we're talking about them potentially winning the one seed, which is, as we've talked about, one of the biggest competitive advantages that you can have in the NBA in general, especially this year in the Eastern Conference.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So I think that the thing that front offices are going to have to get more creative. They're going to have to figure out ways around a lot of this stuff. There were some good things in this CBA.
Yeah. I would add the caveat, the high spending teams. Mm-hmm. We'll have to do this. I think there's actually more tools for teams that are like, for example, the room exception, which is for cap space, teams that have had cap space, that's been expanded. So that kind of encourages, because we've seen a lot of teams, not a lot of teams have been cap space teams like these days. Like a lot of guys are now moving via trade.
Sure. And Sixers fans will remember the Sixers used the room exception a few years ago to sign Mike Scott because they didn't have access to their MLE because they were close up against the cap. But because they had that $5 million room exception, they were able to actually go over the cap and spend more money. So that is expanded. The MLE in general is expanded, which is better for the middle class. But also the non-taxpayer shit is just them, once again, like I think John Wall was another guy, just basically the owners bitching and whining about, you know. Yeah.
It essentially makes a hard cap about $15 million over the first apron, you know. Sure. It's essentially a hard cap because you can't add money in trades. Like you can do some stuff, but you basically the money button only goes one way at that point. Like you can't sign guys. There's like not exceptions. Like I think you can like sign your own guys still, but you can't add players basically. Is essentially like what that cap does. So you know, there's other good things like two-way contracts. You don't have to use part of your cap space or mid-level.
Second round picks, not two-ways. Yeah, which is good. That's a good thing.
Great change. That's great.
Yes. Yeah. With that's always been ridiculous to me that teams need to have access to those exceptions to sign second round picks to contracts that, you know, there might be a little bit more team control on those contracts now, but it's still a way to get more players paid at least.
Exactly. And, you know, that aspect is really good.
But also another thing that Will just pointed out, I didn't even realize this. I agree with Brian in that second round picks will become way more valuable. I think that teams with good scouting departments that nail their second round picks, which the Sixers have, I love that personally. The Sixers are amazing at drafting in the second round. They're horrible at developing those players. They're horrible at keeping those players, but they've done a very great job, so they might be one of the teams that actually benefit from this if they're able to acquire some second-round picks. But Will pointed out, Zach also said, I didn't even hear this part, but Zach heard that if you don't use your MLE, it effectively will now become a trade exception, which is pretty massive, I would say. I was worried about getting deprived of slot as part of this because another part of the – we talked about this the non-taxpayer MLE fraction of it and how, I'm sorry, the taxpayer MLE fraction and how that will go away if teams spend too much money. Yeah. But the other part of that was they can't trade a first 7 years out, which handicaps them. And then also they can't take back more money in trades. So they won't be able to acquire $30 million for a $28 million player. They have to be the team getting back less. So it's not the 125% plus 100,000 that it is in a normal thing, but that could potentially open up some avenues to moving guys that are, for example, De'Anthony Melton could have, if the Sixers in that scenario, they might not have not even needed to send out Danny Green. If they had their MLE, which they did, they could just accept De'Anthony Melton into that. There are guys that will fit as the MLE goes up, maybe the MLE going up will be beneficial. And then we'll get more slop out of the fact that these guys are going to get moved into MLE exceptions, essentially.
Yeah. Well, and they've tied a bunch more numbers to the cap. Like, the MLE has always been tied to the cap and will go up and down with the cap since the last CBA. They changed that. They did the same thing with the tax bands and the apron and stuff, this MLE, which I think is a good, you know, like, it used to be that was just $5 million over, you know, the tax line was the apron. Like, some of this stuff is going to change, you know. They move up and down with that stuff. No, I think that's going to be a fascinating tool. I think we're going to see less teams actually using their TPE or their MLE in the offseason then, and just fucking holding on to the traded player exception. Like, if, you know, moving guys around, I think that's huge for because that's a pretty sizable amount of money. I think that's going to be really I think that's going to make things a little bit more fluid for, like, bad contracts and, like, dumping money. Like, you're going to have more options for dumping money than you would normally, because teams don't usually have a TP, like a traded player exception, that's the size of the MLE. That's pretty substantial. It's like $10 million or $11 million, I think.
And traded player exceptions usually don't get used. I would imagine they get used a lot more now if that is the case. Because every year you're going to have a new one that lasts for a year if you don't use your MLE, which I'm sure in a weak free agency market where there aren't a ton of players that are worthy of the MLE, like, I think that we saw that last year where, like, if I remember correctly, I think PJ Tucker was one of the only players that got the actual full MLE. Like, I don't really remember there being...
JaVale McGee almost did, but then I think they
said... He got the tax MLE.
What?
He got the tax MLE.
Oh, I thought it was...
They were in the tax, which is another...
I think they signed Jaden Springer with part of that, too. So it was, like, not even technically the full...
Jaden Springer. Hardy. Oh, sorry.
Was it?
You know, Jaden Hardy. Yeah. He was, because he was a second round pick, which they won't have to do anymore because of the new second round pick exception, which sounds like a good thing. A good thing to get more second round picks guaranteed money in a way that they haven't before, because up through after pick 40, that's really where you lose a lot of that guaranteed money for these guys. And it's possible that they will get more players that will. And as Brian pointed out, it's going to be teams really need to be savvy with their scouting and who they actually select in the second round. Another element of that is that a lot of these guys that choose not to get drafted, which I think we've talked a little bit about on the podcast before, guys like Austin Reeves and Fred Van Fleet, who do, like, the quote unquote bet on yourself thing, they basically, once pick 40, 45 is over, they say to the last 15 to 20 teams, don't draft me. I want to go undrafted so that I can pick the team that I sign with, right? Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily going to be the case anymore, because they're with this second round exception, they might be able to get more guaranteed money, and they might not need that sort of I want to pick my team kind of thing, because they're going to, I'm not sure if they're going to get, they're obviously not going to get as much guaranteed money as a first round pick, but they certainly could get more guaranteed money that they were not able to before. So that's a good point. Golden State and the Bucks sent out 5 second-round picks, which at the time, at this past deadline, no one really thought anything of it. It's like, who cares? They're second-round picks. Like, second-round picks, you can buy them. Like, it doesn't matter. But now they could be an advantage for team building moving forward. If you're nailing these early to mid second-round picks, then it gives you a massive advantage when spending is going to be kind of tight if you're trying to be one of those teams that spends a lot of money.
Yeah, and I feel, I think I've said this on some previous episodes, but, like, I also think, like, this is not really, like, a problem. Like, teams are going to be asset, teams that are asset deprived are, like, going to have to pay the piper soon. Yeah, like, you know, teams like the Lakers, teams like the Bucks, teams like the Warriors that are just absolutely have no mechanisms, that's gonna, like, catch up, like, in a real way.
Wait, what do you mean by that, though?
Like, I mean by having, they have no picks, they have no,
well, the Warriors have picks, the Bucks and the Bucks, the Sixers, the Lakers, those teams don't really have picks. The Warriors have, like, all their picks except for one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, they traded one to Memphis. They're
Mavericks. Let's say Mavericks
then. There's plenty of teams.
Like, teams like that, like, that's gonna, like, really, it's going to really hurt them not having, like, anything, you know, like, and I think that I do think that, I mean, also we should talk about third, they added a third two way contract, which I think is a good thing. Like,
yeah, that's good.
Get more guys in the league. I guess I didn't really see as many signs as I thought I would in the CBA about like expansion. I haven't really seen anything about expansion because I feel like that's a freebie. Like that's an open and shut case, like for the league right there. Like why that's money on the table. It'd be one thing if the league didn't have the talent to like support it, but this is the deepest the league has ever been. Like there are NBA players getting waived every day. There are like guys.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you serious? There are NBA players getting waived every day.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being a team that would waive a good NBA player for nothing.
Yeah. That'd be crazy. Could you imagine you waive like a, let's say like a 40% ridiculous that no team would ever do. But like, I guess just what I'm saying is like, you know, the league is so much more talented now. I think it's, you know, sports medicine, it's being better at identifying these things. I think it's being better at supporting players who might've fallen through the cracks in previous years. Like, and you know, like with different things, like now there's just a lot of guys who play longer, are better, understand their roles more. And I think, you know, if you want to have a watchable NBA product and you want more fucking games, how about you just add two teams and then everybody plays 76 or whatever that is. There's your extra games. There's your extra fucking television money. Like right there.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that's something that I'm actually didn't even think of that, the expansion element of it, which I would imagine is, I was thinking that it was going to happen sometime in the next 2 to 3 years that we were going to get news of a Las Vegas team or the Sonics coming back or one of these.
I'm kind of shocked we like didn't this year. I kind of thought we were going to get that at like Christmas. Like, same. To be honest, like I thought we were going to get a Woj bomb like around.
We haven't had expansion in almost 20 years. Like 2004 was the last expansion draft, if I remember correctly, with the Bobcats. It might have been 2003. Like it has been so long since they've added a team. It's kind of shocking that they haven't. But back to the All NBA thing. I do just want to say that. The one thing I will say, and I brought this up, why I think that, first off, I'm fine with keeping the positions. I'm not like opposed to the positionless basketball element either. Like I'm open to discussing either idea. I don't think that All NBA is like, I'm not like Bill. Like, I don't think it's like, oh my God, All NBA matters more than anything in the world. It's cool. It's whatever. I mean, I understand why people like it.
I mean, it's tied to money. That's like the main.
But if you remove the money element, I'm fine with doing whatever you want to do. It needs to be positionless for the money element if you want guys to have to reach certain markers for their contracts to be paid the most amount of money possible. Like they should be able to be anyway, regardless of this. But the reason I bring this up is because in this last week of the season right now, there are a few guys that would be locks for All NBA that have not played the required amount of games so far and really are going to cut it super close. So for example, right now, if the season ended today, let's just hypothetically say the season ended today, right? Giannis and Jimmy would not have made all NBA requirements for 65 games.
I don't think Embiid would have either.
What's that?
I don't think Embiid would have either.
No, Embiid played 65 exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was gonna say I think Embiid has and Jokic were just above the line.
Yeah,
I think
played 68 or 67, something like that.
You're right. Embiid's playing 65 tonight. So yeah. Okay. So that's it. So there's that. And Giannis and Jimmy have an opportunity if they play like three or four of their last games. They can make it, but it's basically like Jimmy has to play every single game for the rest of the season to make it on All NBA. Right now, there are certain guys that if you just look at it and you go, okay, like guys like LeBron and KD aren't going to make it anyway because they've played way too, like they played like in the 40s, low 50s, right?
Right.
Jaren Jackson Jr., which maybe you'll come around to this, Jaren Jackson Jr. would not make it, he cannot make All NBA this year based on these new rules.
Great rule. Never mind. I'm wrong. I was wrong about
that. I've pivoted. I've fully pivoted. So if that were the case, let's just say Jimmy and Giannis they sprain their ankle or whatever, and they're not able to play these last few games, right? And maybe guys will schedule it differently moving forward if they know that they won't be able to make it. Based on this, I don't think Jimmy necessarily cares, but someone like Giannis for his legacy. Like, he's going to go down as one of the greatest players of all time. You want to get as many all NBAs as possible, right? Yeah. So let's just say, based on these new requirements, right now the first team would be Tatum and Randall at forward. I'm just going based on, I just sorted EPM and just estimated wins, and it was Tatum and Randall, okay, for first team, which is like already, like, Julius Randle's been awesome this year. He's not first team All NBA.
First team All NBA, Julius Randle.
Yes. Like, that if the season were to end today, second team would be Jalen, who we've discussed for third team, and and Laurie, who we've also talked about as a fringe guy, Laurie Markkanen, as a fringe guy for third team All NBA, but they'd both be second team. And then third team would be DeMar DeRozan and Mikal Bridges. So I think that they've both had nice seasons, but I don't think they've had all NBA seasons. They haven't had top 15 players in the league seasons this year. And the guys that just missed the cut are Franz Wagner, OG Anunoby, and Aaron Gordon. So I moved Jalen up a little bit because he's not quite as high. We know we've talked about the analytical thing, right. But just based on kind of stats plus team success plus where they were in the estimated win section of that, that's what you would have for this. And it's like, I think that the position list thing is going to make it so that, like Bill said on the podcast, this year more guards should make it than forwards. There just should. Like, and it's not like it's going to be all pure point guards. It's going to be guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander who could play the two or the three, like, in theory, could play the two or the three anyway. So it doesn't really matter all that much. So there are certain elements of this where I feel as though getting the 15 best players, especially if it's tied to contracts, is actually the right move. Regardless, I don't really care about the first team, second team, third team thing. But, like, the one thing that Bill keeps talking about and these people that care about the history keep talking about are, we care about looking at the snapshot of the league and what it looked like. And I'm like, well, then what is better than the 15 best players?
Yeah.
Like, what? Yeah. Like, Vin Baker making it second team All-NBA in the 90s and early 2000s. Like, was Vin Baker one of the 10 best players in the NBA?
Well, and I love that Bill's argument is that, like, that's what the MVP voting is supposed to be, is the positionless, like, top five. It's like, yeah, because we all remember how we always say a guy is...
Carmelo Anthony finished third in MVP that season.
Wow, incredible. Like, we only use that when it's a guy who's, like, literally never on there. Like, I'll say, like, remember when Joakim Noah got, like, fifth place, like, MVP? Yes. You know, like, that's the only time you'll ever hear about. Like,
George came in third place that one year.
Yeah. Like, I'm never going to think of Joel Embiid as runner-up in MVP. You know what I'm saying? I'm always going to think of him as, like, yeah, he was, like, back and forth. Like, he could have been MVP that year. It is, like, what I would think of him. It, like, where you end up in the play. I'm never going to think about Jason Tatum getting fourth place MVP votes. By the way, what Brian said in the comments is absolutely right. I welcome Jason Tatum's Mickey Mouse MVP candidacy is going to be incredible.
Because he plays so many games. Him and Mikal Bridges are going to be feasting for a decade because they just don't miss games is really what's going to happen here.
Luka is going to get into, like, some sort of advanced hookah accident or something. Keep him out for, like, 20 games. And Jason Tatum's just default going to get, like, three MVPs.
Luka has singed his throat. Too much hookah and sweet tea. Just chugging sweet tea by the gallon. Kind of back to what you're saying. If you go to Joel Embiid's Wikipedia page, you see career highlights and awards. Six-time All-Star, four-time second-team All-NBA. No mention of the runner-up for MVP in either of those seasons. Like, it's a reality is that most people don't remember who was the runner-up for MVP unless it's a year like this year where it's so contested that it goes up into, like, the final week of the season. Like, the only other time that I could think of this was the Harden-Kawhi Russ year.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the example I was going to give. Yeah.
It's the only other year I could think of. Most years, the MVP is pretty clear, I would say. Like, Steph's unanimous, LeBron. Like, yeah.
Well, and that's the only other time would be, like, Derrick Rose or something that we look back on as, like, a little bit Mickey Mouse because of, like, you know, attenuating circumstances. Yeah, LeBron probably should have won it that year or something, whatever the case may be. Like, that's pretty rare. Or, like, the Steve Nash MVP or something, right. Like, you know, like, where it's, like, something where it's, like, what were we really doing there? So, I totally throw out that argument. I think it's fine to, you know, do whatever, but again, it needs to be separated from the money. Yeah.
Sure.
That's the, that's...
I'm fine with keeping the positions as long as we divorce it from the money. Cause if you divorce it from the money, then I'm fine with preserving what you would perceive as a basketball team. Cause like Embiid and Jokic are never going to play on the same team. Like that makes sense in my mind, at least.
But I really think that could work, by the way.
I've talked about it before, and I do think that it could work just because they're both so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, they would win, like, 70 regular season games. Like, playoffs, I might be a little bit like, all right, what's, like, a team could figure some shit out, but that would certainly be an issue. But they never will realistically play on a team together.
Can you imagine them screening for each other and passing to each other? Like, holy shit.
Like, it would certainly be, it would basically be like, what if the Timberwolves weren't, bitch made?
What if they were awful. I mean, like, look, and I'm the first one to say, I think it would be good if we prevent things from like Andre Drummond being an all NBA guy ever, like, again. Like third team All NBA or like Rudy Gobert. How many All NBAs does Rudy Gobert have?
I think Russillo used that as his example of like he was like Rudy was like, you know, a really good player, but he was never top 15 for 5 years or however many years in it. But it was the product of a weak positional element. Like I understand that.
Bam always gets considered. Is Bam ever close to being a top 15 NBA player?
No, he's a top 25 guy. Like he's like a top 25, top 30 guy. Yeah,
and he's always getting votes. He's like always on the fringes of like making all.
If it weren't for Sabonis's this year, he probably would have made it again as third team. Yeah. And more importantly, Sabonis, as great as he is really a kind of a small ball center. Like I mean, like he is a power forward that's playing center due to the reality of what the modern NBA is, and you can't have him plus if you're going to run your offense through him, it's going to get a little bit weird if you have another big out there that isn't literally Miles Turner. Like that's basically the reality of that situation.
Speaking of which, now that we bring this up, I'm going to spoil something for when we do our end of the year thing and our like playoff predictions. I have now decided the Sacramento Kings are going to win the Western Conference. And I'm like actually serious about this. Did you hear about did you hear the stat that Russillo and Bill had on their pod? Like
teams?
Yeah. Road wins?
Yeah.
Just saying.
They're the only team that can win on the road in the West. It's so weird. Like teams that I believe in the most.
Yeah.
Like the Warriors and the Nuggets are just horrible on the road.
Yeah, they're altitude and venture capital merchants. Yeah. But they are credit score NFTs and high altitude and weed.
Look,
home field advantages of these teams.
Jordan Poole can only ball if Peter Thiel is doing a blood sacrifice in the building.
Yes, do the baddies. He's created blood baddies. Like they're baddies made out of blood.
Theranos baddies.
Theranos baddies. You know he saw Jordan Poole when he saw Elizabeth Holmes courtside highlights.
Oh Jesus Christ.
I would love that. I would love to see the text that Elizabeth Holmes would send Jordan Poole. You are my everything. Okay, cowboy. Texting back. Okay.
Leave Ice Spice.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's in his text next to Ice Spice.
Why can't I be her?
Oh.
Jesus Christ. So, oof, Jesus Christ. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit more about the Western Conference stuff when we talk about the Warriors, but
yeah.
Last thing about this CBA, the midseason tournament is also involved in this. Yeah. At first, I hated the idea of the midseason tournament.
Yeah,
I'm still kind of iffy on it, but yeah. I also was like, didn't love the idea of the play-in at first.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever. But the play-in's fun. The play-in actually has real stakes. So yeah. There is at least an element of that where it's like, you know, you get to see some of the best players going fucking, like, we've seen Steph and LeBron 1 year. We'll probably see Jimmy Butler in the Heat this year and then a bunch of other guys in the Western Conference. But the midseason tournament, I actually kind of am coming around to the idea. They talked about the pay element of it, that basically every team on the winning team will get an extra $500,000, which is a nice incentive for, especially for the guys that make like, what, $1.5 million at the end of the bench. Like, you're getting a third of your salary in 1 week because you win.
If you're teammates, you're trying to look out for your boy. Like, if I'm Jason Tatum, I'm like, JD Davidson, you are about to eat, my friend. Like, I am going to look out for you.
You're getting a bag.
You are getting a bag. We're going to take care of you. I mean, like, I think the idea, like, once I realized they were like pooling anything to give regular season games, this is how I've come down on it. I'm fine with them having a midseason tournament as long as it's not added onto the games. I mean, ideally, games, less regular season games out of here. But like, I'm fine with them doing like, they kind of do something like this in like the English Premier League, where they have what's called the FA Cup, which is like, you know, everything. It's the whole country. It's all the different teams. That's like what makes it cool for them, you know, like and their things. But I think that having a parallel competition within the season, that's like fun. I honestly think it's probably going to work pretty well with the pools. I think it will give, depending on how they stagger. It sounds like they're going to do this starting in like November.
Right.
I don't think is ideal. I think ideally you want to be pooling these games in like January and February.
That's what I was thinking. That would be actually middle of the season.
That's what, like, if you could find a way to make those shitty doldrum of the season games like mean something, like, I would tune in if you told me like, Hawks Magic tonight, and it's like, oh, but it's the in-season tournament game, you know, like, yeah, because I think I'm getting that right. I think I read it essentially, basically the tournament is just like they pick games on the schedule and those are designated tournament games, basically. Like,
sure, yeah. So they mean things, and then they basically all end up playing the winners of those, whatever, they end up having one extra game, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
From the player aspect, the money element will definitely motivate some guys. I think that it will give at least a little bit more juice and meaning to the games. And then the other element that someone brought up when we were doing a playback stream the other night that I liked was, for the final two teams, we should give comp picks in the draft. So you get like the first pick in the second round if you win, and you get like the second or third pick in the second round if you get to the finals and you lose. So that's like another incentive. Not that the players really care all that much about that, but from a team aspect, I think it would be cool if we could come up. We just talked about the importance of second round picks now. Like, you get basically almost the equivalent of a late first round pick in the draft. That's massively beneficial to your team building moving forward and could even potentially get you back up into the first round. I kind of like that idea. Like, if you just added a comp pick element to it for the teams that get to the finals or win the midseason tournament.
Yeah. The only problem with that is the
Jonathan. There we go.
Well, the incentives are a little fucked up for that though, right? Like, are players really going to play for like a guy that can like replace them? Like, is Grant Williams really going to play, bust his ass?
True. Good point.
like the guy who's gonna like be behind him like in a game.
I just thought from the fan perspective, because like what do we care? That's, like you're a sicko and you right. care a lot about the pick that the Rockets
have. I would love that. That would be amazing. I like, don't get me wrong, fans would love that. I just think it would be kind of hard to get the players motivated for the, you know, I mean, I guess the players are competitive, you know what I'm saying? Maybe just it being a national TV game is enough. I think players always get up for national TV games because, like, you know, you get to show your stuff, you know, so like maybe that's enough. Maybe the money and the picks together, like
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you get both.
So
you have, there's motivation from the player standpoints to give a fuck, and there's motivation from the team and the fan side for them to be like, oh shit, we could get the 31st pick of the draft. The Memphis Grizzlies are going to be going fucking ham for that shit, dude. Are you kidding me? Their fans are going to be hanging a 31st pick in the draft banner.
They're going to put Brandon Clark in some sort of like Resident Evil 4 contraption and have a blood sacrifice to like Mammon to get that second round pick. Like we are going to like draft the most Jake LaRavia man you've seen in your life. We are going to create Jake LaRavia 2. Horrible flesh golem made out of all of the fucking limbs we found. I love the idea of a Jake LaRavia Frankenstein being built in Ridley's lab. Chris, hey Frankenstein last night. He's incredible. They got bolts sticking out of his neck. Kevin, I have never seen a man whooping like that. What can I say, Chris? Frankensteins are great. And you know, even mummies. Hold on, Kevin. You're telling me that you think mummies are going to be playing at a high level. I mean, you look at vampires. I know you did not just invoke vampires on this podcast when talking about mummies. Good grief. I mean, we're talking about swamp creatures, werewolves, classics. You got to talk about mummies.
By the way, it's funny you bring up that underrated part of that Grizzlies trade. Do you know who was drafted with the pick? So they had two picks.
Yeah.
They packaged both of them together to move up to get Jake LaRavia.
Yeah.
Do you know who was picked with that first pick that they traded to move up like five spots?
Let me think of this.
It was I'll give you a hint. It was traded to Minnesota.
Oh my God. Was it Jaden McDaniels?
No, it was this past year. It was 2022. It was Walker Kessler. So they traded.
That's Walker. Even worse.
I know. One of the more underrated bad drafts that we've seen recently. And I love David Roddy, but like they traded Melton and two picks in the 20s for Jake LaRavia and David Roddy. And one of those picks became Walker Kessler. The other one's Wendell Moore, who.
Well, do you know why they had to do that? Because they had too many fucking guys on their roster. Because they won't fucking do a consolidation trade.
Yes.
Because they have too many fucking guys. Because they think they're too smart for this shit. I'm telling you, it's gonna fucking catch up with them. They're gonna need to make the OG Anunoby trade or whatever the fuck they're gonna. The Jaylen Brown trade.
Tried to make the Mikal Bridges trade, and they there's no way they're prying them for Brooklyn now.
Like, even if it's like just trading for fucking Dorian Finney-Smith or something, like, do that. Like, who cares? Like, trade for them, I think.
The one thing I will say though is, although the 2024 draft sucks. I was going to say, if you're a draft sicko, if you're a Grizzlies sicko, they have the Warriors pick in 2024, which is looking way better than I had ever anticipated.
I don't know. Wiggins back, baby. Wiggins is back.
Oh, but it's next year after Draymond possibly leaves is what I'm trying to get at here. So,
yeah, but look, if I'm the Warriors, I simply grant courtside tickets to any courtside baddies possible. And then Jordan Poole becomes the greatest
all NBA.
Yeah, it's a Gary Payton level defense. He's like Marcus Smart. Like
his son's right there. He can just learn from the
yeah.
Jake LaRavia 2, Gary Payton 2. It's the same concept.
Exactly. Yeah. Jake LaRavia 2. Gary Payton 2 also made out of decaying limbs, apparently. So bad that they almost canceled the trade.
Jesus Christ.
That was your guy, though. He still looks great, by the way. I hate to say I was right yet again, but look at where you brought me. Look at where it brought you. He thanked them. You could not live with your Gary Payton, Thanos the Warriors. Yeah,
he did. Yeah,
you could not live with your failure. Look where it brought you.
Back to me.
Yeah,
I mean James Wiseman and the Detroit Pistons are 1-19. So,
oh my God.
So that's not great.
In some ways, it's probably functioning exactly how Troy Weaver
anticipated. Yeah, the Wemby suites. I mean, we joked that when Presti was getting a lot of pressure from the media early in the season, I joke with Alex from Saturday Slam and Jam, and we said, what you need to do here is just trade for James Wiseman, and everyone's like, they finally made a move to win now, and then in reality, you're tanking for Wemby, and maybe Troy Weaver heard that.
Next level.
RJ Hampton, James Wiseman, all the terrible players from the 2020 draft.
They had their other high pick stealth tank guy get hurt, so they needed to replace him with a new one. All right, that will be the last time I slander Kane on the podcast
today. Okay, all right, fair.
So Pistons fans, it's safe to tune back in. I should have trigger warning that.
Okay, so let's move on to you'll be able to talk about this. I did watch the game, but you'll be able to talk about this a little bit more. Celtics Bucks. I watched and I was shocked that it was virtually never competitive after like the first 5 minutes of the game. And I want to say the schedule loss thing, I get it. The Sixers have had a hard schedule recently. They probably lost some games where they ran out of juice in the second half. You don't get fucking destroyed by 40 points because of a schedule loss.
It's a fucking home game. Home game, and you rested players in the Pacers game so they would be ready for this. I don't buy that like at all. No, what you really say, okay, like Bucks fans are getting shit for this, which they're saying that Celtics aren't going to shoot like that forever, which is like very hilariously what they said during the thing like last year. And it's like, you know, in some ways it is how Bud defends, you know, like, but I will say this for the Bucks. I mean, that is the absolute bellwether on the Celtics. You know, we've seen it with the beginning of the year to now. Is if the Celtics are shooting threes at a, you know, a clip that they absolutely can hit them at, but they're just going to win automatically. And that's what makes them look amazing. That's where these 30-point blowouts, this is where their giant point differential comes from, where if they are hitting shots, they are cut and dry the best team in the league.
Yeah.
The problem is that you are not always hitting shots. This is not the Warriors, for example. Like, the Celtics have the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. They have the world-beating three-point shooters, and they do have doo-doo mode. Doo-doo mode is always a threat with the Boston Celtics. And if the Celtics, it's certainly looking like they're not going to have home court advantage. Thank you, Sixers. They are going to the Celtics are almost certainly going to, you know, that's going to matter. Like if you lose a game, that matters a lot more when you don't have home court. And I think, you know, I will say this. I don't think that this means the Celtics are like clear of the Bucks or anything like that. I just think that what it is it just shows the firepower that the Celtics like can play with, and that they always do, even against like one of the best defenses in the league with three of the best defensive players in the league, really on the team. They like literally could not do anything against the Celtics like whatsoever when they're on. So
I just want to say, I think that we've never wavered from the fact that we feel as though the Celtics and the Bucks are in the same tier at worst. I think at first we had the Celtics above, then we had the Bucks they had their stretch, and it was just like they were incredible for 2 months, and we gave credit to them, and we might have slightly put them ahead, but we always had them in the same general area as contenders. I will say, though, like, in the only healthy games this year, the Celtics have clearly looked like the better team. That might be a little bit of a problem matchup in a way. They just made the Bucks look kind of old and unathletic in a way that I hadn't anticipated. because last year the series was so close without Middleton, but I know that it's the Bucks aren't going to look this terrible. Like, they're just not going to shoot that poorly. And I've been seeing clips and I've been watching things about, you know, the Bucks new offense and how, you know, they're generating more looks and they have more ball movement and the guys are moving more and they're running more sets and blah, 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 blah. That game, I felt like they completely couldn't get into anything. I felt like they, by the second quarter, they were just chucking threes and it was going very poorly for them. I think by the third quarter, the game was very clearly over. And, you know, they obviously just kind of waved the white towel or white flag in the third quarter. But my whole takeaway from this is that, like, the Celtics might be a worse matchup for the Bucks than we had anticipated. Maybe part of it is due to the hot shooting, but another part of it is that the Bucks have the ability to look really terrible sometimes. And they've, even throughout their runs, they've done this. Like, they were down 0-2 to the Nets and looked terrible through two games. They ended up coming back and winning that series partially due to some injury stuff, partially due to the fact that they just played better in the last few games. But the Bucks are not immune. I don't think any teams are immune to diaper mode is what I'm trying to say here in this. There is no foolproof Warrior shit where teams are just getting run off the court by the other team because there's just too much firepower and the system is impossible to beat with Steph Curry.
I just don't think, I mean, this is a huge caveat, the caveat even being that, like, if Doc knows what he's doing, which I understand, but I really don't even think the Sixers are, like, dead, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know that I've seen some of that out there that, like, the Sixers are, like, you know, they're too hurt, whatever. I don't really buy that, to be honest. Like, I really think the East is still very good. I think, you know, the Celtics, this is, like, such a fascinating team because I you know, it's so weird because they do have this, like, toughness and, like, battle-testedness, like, on this roster of guys who have been in a lot of really big games, really high stakes wars, specifically against Giannis and the Bucks. They've played each other a billion times. Like, so, like, on the one hand, I, like, get all of that. The other thing is just, I guess what I would say about the Celtics from, like, watching them all year is, like, they also can, like, absolutely, Brian had, like, the stat in the comments earlier, and I'd, like, I'll go back to it. Celtics were 8-4 on the road and 6-6 at home last playoffs. Like, it just, they don't operate in ways that make sense, I guess is what I'm going to say. Like, they do a lot of, I remember this is an old Sixers thing from back in the day where you guys would doo-doo mode against the bad teams and destroy the good teams. Like,
Yeah. It's just a ton of randomness.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of that. I think the Bucks take care of business, you know what I'm saying? But
sure.
I think, you know, the Bucks are a team that beats up on the bad teams, you know? But I think the Celtics have been more prone to, you know, doing things like, let's say, losing to a Jabari Smith-led Rockets effort or like that on the road.
Sure.
You know, but, like, dude, shit like that, that just should never happen. Losing to the Wizards without Bradley Beal by 20, or you know, like, which was the game before.
So, Denny Avdia, Corey Kispert, yeah.
Yeah, just getting cooked by the guys who were picked ninth, like, and just have no future in the league. I guess
you might not know this off the top of your head. I just have a question for you.
Yeah.
When we were kind of like, man, the Celtics don't look great, were they playing a lot of games in a short amount of time?
Not really.
Okay, because the reason I ask is because their schedule is pretty spread out down the stretch here. Like, yeah. This is, they're playing tonight and they haven't played since this Bucks game, right?
They played a really front-loaded schedule.
Okay, there we go.
I think it, like, got back to normal here. Like, they've been, like, more or less. But they there were, like, points in, like, December when they had played, like, four more games than everybody else.
Yeah, I'm wondering about the rhythm factor of it for me. Because I'm thinking about, like, I actually think that the Sixers, throughout their little stretch where they played a lot of games in a small amount of time, exceeded my expectations. And I've heard players talk about playing in a rhythm and getting into, like, if you have a game every other day, if you have a game spread out, like, I literally tweeted at one point, I feel like the Sixers are better on the second half of back-to-backs than they are when they have two or three days rest. And Bodner tweeted at me and it was like, they were, like, their record was better. And it might be not as great right now, but, like, my point here is that I wonder if it affects certain teams differently. And when you get into the playoffs, if that could be beneficial to a team like the Celtics that you said at the beginning of the year, when they were in their rhythm, when they were playing a lot of games, they could miss from three. They were, and now when you get to the playoffs, like the most days rest you get is two, unless you win around super early, obviously. But you're usually only having one day off in between. I tend to think that might, I mean, everyone has the same thing. So it kind of at least neutralizes that a little bit. But I do wonder I would be interested to see if like hot shooting teams that rely on 3-point variance, if there is a rhythm factor to it. Cause I buy into the fact that like, if you're just a guy who stands in the corner all game and you can't get into rhythm, that like it can make you shoot worse essentially, even though maybe some of those guys become specialists like PJ Tucker or Grant Williams or whoever. But there are guys like Isaiah Joe, for example, who are like need to be in a rhythm, need to be playing regularly, need to get the ball to really feel their rhythm. I'm just wondering if there's any sort of correlation there.
I mean, there probably is. I mean, I think it is funny. I mean, I think there's something to be said for that we always treat like second half of a back-to-back or 5-7, you know, as like bad.
Death sentence.
Yeah, like, you know, we always say that's like, you know, that's a bad thing. And, you know, I think it probably is like 60 to 70% of the time. But I think
it's more bad because they're players sitting out in a lot of those games because of like for team chemistry purposes.
Yeah, I wonder if that actually matters like that much for like younger guy. You know what I'm saying? Like Rob Williams obviously probably does not benefit well from that. Al Horford probably doesn't benefit from that. But guys like Derek White and Jason Tate, guys who play all the fucking games anyway, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder if that actually helps them, you know, like you're just saying, like with the rhythm thing. And maybe, you know, maybe it's in us like kind of looking at that a little bit more nuanced. In a more nuanced way that, like, you know, it isn't necessarily bad all the time to have these guys playing in short amount of times as long as the proper guys are getting protected from, you know, the injury aspect of it. You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. And, like, guys like Giannis, doesn't take games – like, this is the first year where Giannis has really taken – there's maybe been 2 years in his career where he's, like, taken games off. But, like, I don't know. He doesn't really seem like a guy that gets, like, worn down and tired. Like, it's just kind of, like, not really in his DNA. And, like...
Yeah, that's, like, he's
an Iron Man.
Yeah, his supernatural skill is, like, relentlessness.
Yeah.
Like, he... The fact that he, like, fucked up all those free throws and just kept shooting, like, big dick... That was pretty fucking impressive.
Giannis actually does. Look, I make the jokes about Giannis as much as anyone else.
Right.
But he is... he really is just lets nothing face him in a way that like guys like Jimmy Butler make it their whole brand. Giannis is kind of in the same tier as that in terms of like, I'm just not going to let shit get to me.
No. And he's like, he's not as showy about it as like Jimmy. He's like not a grind set guy. He's a little bit.
Yeah.
He's a sex with my wife guy.
Different kind of grind.
Yeah. Different. I think, well, I like Giannis's thing is like corny, you know. It's what's the old Jason Conception thing of like smoothies, you know, like oh, I'm so like, oh, it's amazing. I'm the small market guy. I love everyone in Wisconsin.
Yeah, you know? I'm not about that noise. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
sounds good. You make a social media post after every single game.
By the way, shout out to Thanasis on his one game suspension. Very funny. Blake.
Actually, I'm going to say that's why the Sixers lost. He was out for that game.
Didn't have him out there to agitate. I love that he was trying to get in Blake Griffin's head and Blake just laughed in his face.
That was pretty funny.
That was awesome. Yeah. Very good. I love Bully Blake. I got to say, I'm really enjoying the Blake Griffin experience.
I always forget he's on the Celtics.
Yeah. Well, because he only shows up like when you're not like relying on him when he's like a DH who's like out there like once every like four games.
Yeah.
Awesome. Can't recommend him enough. Like really enjoying the Blake Griffin experience, but like in those small doses.
As long as you don't have to depend on him at all in any capacity. I'm sure he's great.
Yep. Five guy. Locker room guy.
So people might want to get my thoughts on the Sixers game, but I just briefly need to talk about someone who was arrested this week. Sam might know a little bit about this. Are you aware that Donald Trump is 20? Hold on one second. Let me look up her age. I'm Googling Melania Trump.
Oh boy, don't tell me. It's always the guys you don't want it to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
52 years old. She's 24 years younger than him. Can you believe it?
I'm so disappointed in Donald Trump. This is the worst thing he's ever done.
Jesus Christ. God. Yeah, no.
That's why he's being arraigned right now.
Exactly. Yeah, age gap stuff. Yeah, we got to get to the bottom of it. Yeah. People and then we'll talk about the Sixers Bucks next week.
They take that very seriously in New York City. They don't let older men date younger women in New York City. That is famously not allowed. That is not allowed in New York City.
Yeah, exactly. But my serious thoughts on Sixers Bucks is not great. I watched that game and it felt very similarly. This is how I can cope. Let me look at it two ways.
Okay.
One way I can look at it and say, well, the Bucks shot like crazy in the first half. They couldn't miss anything. The other way I could look at it is, well, the Sixers allowed them to get a ton of open looks, and honestly, their defensive effort was completely piss poor, and they really didn't give a shit until about the third quarter when they staged somewhat of a mini comeback. The positives I can look at from this game is that Tyrese Maxey, for some reason, whenever he plays the Bucks, turns into Steph Curry. He went like 6-for-7 from three, I believe, in that game. Offensively, I had some concerns about this team. I'm way more concerned about the defense. They've fallen to 10th in defense, which they were like 6th or 7th for most of the season. The effort down the stretch might be part of it. Another part of it might be the fact that, like, honestly, Joel Embiid and James Harden don't look 100%. I don't think they're dead in the water, but I think the way that this set up for them, they had a chance if they win that game to face the Bucks in the second round. And I still would prefer the Bucks matchup to the Celtics matchup due to the fact that everything we've talked about, the Sixers struggling with the Celtics wings, the length, the versatility, the shooting, all that stuff. I still feel as though, even though the Bucks won that game, I think part of the reason why the Bucks won that game was because the Sixers had their little comeback, which we kept saying all in the first half, we're like, I don't even worry when the Sixers get down 15 to 20 points anymore. It's weird where, like, before it was like, oh my God, they're shitting the bed, it's a disaster, whatever. Like, obviously I don't feel great, but they almost always stage some sort of comeback in the second half. When they get to the point in the third quarter where they cut the lead down to like 6 points in the third quarter, Embiid picks up his fourth foul. Giannis was already on the bench with foul trouble. They put Giannis back in. This is the second time in 3 years that the Sixers have, I'm sorry, second time in 2 years, because Paul Millsap last year had this game, where Giannis basically ended the game at the end of the third quarter when Joel Embiid went to the bench and he went on a personal run. Mm-hmm. There's just going to be games where the Sixers are going to struggle a ton without Joel in the court. And in a game where Joel's not dominating, like, he was settling for a bunch of threes, he wasn't being aggressive. I don't know if it's a fatigue thing, if it's an injury thing, or if it's just like they weren't as locked in for this game or whatever. It was certainly not the best performance from Joel. The only thing I'm really worried about on the whole here is that James Harden has not been James Harden outside of like maybe one game for about 2 weeks. And we're now getting to James Harden diaper mode time of the year, mm-hmm. where he can have some of his worst games in the playoffs. And if he's not 100%, that limits what the Sixers can do in the playoffs, regardless if they play the Celtics or the Bucks or whoever they play. So on the whole, I'm worried about Harden. I'm a little bit less worried about Embiid. I do think that might just be a little bit of kind of like him phoning in the last few games or whatever. I think he just wants to reach that threshold so he can be considered for MVP. And I think that I'm concerned more about Harden, and I'm concerned about Doc Rivers, who will play George Niang tonight again, despite the fact that Niang can't hit a three. He can't do anything else. If his shot isn't going in, he's completely like useless on this team. And Daniel House came in the second half, which we've all been saying House should just play, because he gives the Sixers an element of something they don't have. He can shoot. at least capably above average. He is a scrappy defender. He does some bozo stuff sometimes, but a lot of players on this team do. And he can drive and pass and do normal wing things. So ultimately, the two things I'm worried the most about are just Doc's rotation decisions again, where he went small towards the end and Giannis just destroyed them when Embiid sat. Pulling Paul Reed, even though Paul Reed has been honestly fantastic recently. And the fact that Niang just continues to play over and over, despite the fact that outside of the one Bucks game, which might end up being a curse because he hit so many threes in that one Bucks game, that it's probably going to end up being another thing where, like, the Sixers just kind of need to be perfect if they want to beat the Celtics or Bucks. And, like, Doc is going to give you a massive margin for he's not going to cover up that margin for error is what I'm trying to say. He's only going to make it worse, if anything.
Yeah. I think that's I mean, that's kind of been my take on the Sixers. Is they have the talent. I worry about Doc Rivers being flexible enough when the chips are down to make the proper rotation. Like, especially now that you guys have McDaniels, I think he gives you guys like a very much needed wing element. And size specifically at the wing element that what, you know, you can go to if Daniel House isn't doing, if George Niang's not working, PJ Tucker, for whatever reason, doesn't have it. Like, DNP old, you know, like
he what, is some nights I'm like, wow, PJ Tucker. And other nights I'm like, wow, PJ Tucker. It can be good and bad. But kind of going off your point with that McDaniels thing, there has been a lineup that anytime it's on the court, this is what frustrates me more than anything about Doc, is that it's not that Doc is bad with his rotations, because he is. But what he does is he finds a lineup that works, and then he just never goes to it again. He did it 2 years ago with the Sixers starters, where they put Shake Milton in for Danny Green, and it gave him enough handling, creation, defense, everything you needed. And it was literally the best lineup in the NBA. Anytime we played it, it only played like 100 possessions the entire season. Anytime we played it, we ran teams off the court, and we just did not play it ever in the playoffs. We only played it a handful of times in the regular season. It's all just throwing shit at the wall. They, in a recent lineup where whenever they played it, and I know it's against weaker teams, it's not against the Celtics and Bucks, but it gives them an element that they've never had before, which the lineup is Shake Milton, Daniel House, Jalen McDaniels, James Harden, and Paul Reed. Now, they've only played this lineup in 3 games. They played it 17 minutes, okay? So that sample size is, you can't take anything from that, obviously. But anytime we've watched it, I'm like, man, this lineup looks like it does really well anytime they play. Like, why don't we play this lineup? Like, this should be like our second lineup that we go to when Embiid goes to the bench. Mm-hmm. It's a plus 35 in net rating.
Like,
right now. In 17 minutes right now.
Awesome.
So, like, there's no reason that you should not be trying this lineup consistently when Embiid goes to the bench. And then if it doesn't work the first time, you can change it in the second half. It's all like, and they talked about this on the Bill and Russillo pod, it's like these coaches that get married to their rotations and these ideas they have of players. Yeah. And like, and Doc's, to his credit, has pulled Niang, and he has pulled guys like Melton who struggled. He's even pulled Tobias and Tucker in different games when they have struggled. Yeah. I give him credit for that. The problem is, in the second half, he pulled George Niang because George Niang was playing like shit against the Bucks. Mm-hmm. And then in the second half, he put him back in, and he was getting destroyed by Bobby Portis. Literally, anytime he was out there, they just gave the ball to Bobby Portis, and he cooked him. And I was like, it's like he has a goldfish brain. Like, he does not remember what happened in the first half of the game. So, overall, I'm just...
He is ready for the golf course.
When he's leaning over and he's sweating, he's literally just thinking about like, oh, I'm gonna go to this offseason, I'm going to Augusta.
I am gonna he's thinking about the back nine and just how he is going to dominate it.
I just wish the Lakers saved us from this.
That was so close.
They were so close. Like, the Sixers should have just pretended. Like, the Sixers should have just been like, yeah, we don't need compensation. It's fine. It's fine. If you want to take him, you can take him off our hands if you want. You know, Doc going back, coaching LeBron.
I guess we got to hire Will Hardy. Ugh.
Oh, boy. Oh, shucks.
Darn. I guess we got to bring in Quinn Snyder. Darn it.
Dang it.
Oh,
all right. So that's kind of my thoughts. Overall, once again, even I'm not taking a ton of shit from the last 2 weeks of the regular season, because I think that I will say the Celtics-Bucks games might be a little bit – the reason why I might put a little bit more in that – honestly, and I should put a little bit more on the Sixers, because the Sixers had an opportunity to face the Bucks in the second round, a team I think that they could at least push in the series, and they blew their chance. So I do put a little bit on that game, and I put a little bit on the Celtics-Bucks because that game had seeding purposes. That had meaning for seeding purposes. So I'm not saying that these games don't matter, but I'm not like taking away like this team is not a contender. This team is a contender. Yeah. I still kind of feel the same way that I felt before.
Yeah. The Bucks are obviously still dangerous about the Celtics, but I was going insane when the discourse was just like, yeah, well, you know, the Bucks were playing 5 and 7 nights and they just like left it. And it was like, no, they were so locked in. The announcers on the game were literally like, this is like intense. This is playoff intensity.
In the first half.
And the Celtics just beat the living shit out of them. Like literally beat it out of them. The competitiveness. And like, I just like everyone memory hold that. I don't think it's nothing. I think Bill and Russillo probably had it right where it's like, you know, or this is a statement game. You know, I think that is more what it was about. Like just the Celtics being like, we can beat you anytime. Like, as I think more what it was about. It's not necessarily the Bucks can't hang or anything like that. But
what it comes down to is that if you win a title, you get benefit of the doubt forever.
Yeah.
And the Bucks won a title and they have the best two-way player. So they'll just get the benefit of the doubt forever instead of properly diagnosing it in a way that actually Ben Thompson, who is Bill Simmons' friend, said, he's like, the Celtics have always been a bad matchup for Giannis. Like, outside of the Kyrie year, they've always given him problems, especially when they have Horford. And Horford and Grant Williams give you guys enough size and
most importantly
size, strength, all that shit.
Did you watch the game at all?
Yeah, I watched the whole game.
Oh, okay.
Well, until the fourth quarter.
So they started with Smart on Giannis.
Yeah.
Which was like very interesting. And that credit to Mazzulla. I think that was a really ballsy call. And I think that worked out because your options if you're Giannis are if you're gonna post Smart, Smart strong, but you give the Celtics the chance to build the wall. And then they can do the thing with like building out to shooters. I think having Rob Williams in that game was another important thing because he was like pretty much not available during the playoff series that they played. And I think that's a huge.
He was great in that game. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like,
I think Rob's more important for a Bucks matchup than for a Sixers matchup, to be honest.
Absolutely. No, Rob can't guard Embiid. Embiid is like the one guy Rob just gets trucked by.
And also, the inverse of that is that Rob being a non-shooter gives them someone that they can rest off of with Embiid in the paint area, is what I'm trying to say, which is really what he is best at.
Yeah, and Embiid is big enough because for most teams, Rob has such a wide catch radius that you can't actually do that. But like Embiid is so big and so athletic, actually can kind of interfere with that catch radius with Rob. So, but then the Celtics just go small with Horford, and that's
exactly
that's always been their solution to the Embiid thing. Rob, as you properly diagnosed, Rob would probably play a lot less in a Sixers series than he would in a Bucks series. So, I think it's going to be good. The Mickey Mouse West is going to be in trouble unless one man can return to bring some authenticity to a team.
A former number one overall pick from the best player from the University of Kansas from the 2014 draft.
That's right. Absolutely right.
No, I do just have a quick thing before. If you got to pick your matchup, because you guys are probably going to be the 2 seed, barring Bucks collapse, Celtics win out. If you got to pick your matchup for the first round, do you want the Heat? Do you just want to fucking kick the shit out of them? Or would you rather have a walkover like, oh, we'll just kick the shit out of the Hawks easily?
It really doesn't matter to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't. This is the Mad Men, like I feel bad for you. I don't think about you.
Meaning, sure,
is how I feel about the Heat. Like, the Heat. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would be annoying if the Heat won two games and it was like, oh, here we go. The Heat, they play them what? But they're just too bad this year, man. Like, they're.
Would it not be cathartic to just like kick the shit out of them, though? Kind of similar to how the Bucks did.
I think that team is essentially dead. Like, the Kyle Lowry trade essentially killed that team. They're not. I don't. They're on their way out the door. I mean, it would be kind of fun to like drive the like stake into their hearts, but like, I don't. How annoying low post would be for like 2 weeks. Jimmy Butler. Did you know that he hit a shot? Did you know that if he hit a 3-pointer, that the Celtics would have lost? That would have been a disaster for the Celtics if he had hit it. If he had hit that shot. Hey, if he had hit that shot, did you remember that shot? Annoying. I don't.
They were within one shot of the finals. Again,
one shot of the finals.
Negative 40-point differential in the series.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's weird that they came back and were dog shit, almost like they were dog shit the whole time, and everyone knew that.
That would have been the diaper mode to end all diaper modes if the Celtics lost that game.
Yeah, that was really bad. I mean, they found their diaper mode destiny, but it was covered up by the fact that Steph was like insane, so that made it like less in contrast because everyone was.
Oh,
like,
one of the 10 best basketball players of all time just went god mode. Insane.
And it's like Jason Tatum kind of got to like slink out and change the diaper like
with really hurt his shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like okay, I get it. He had a hurt shoulder. We understand. Yeah. He was incredible for most of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Jason Tatum were not a Celtic, I would be saying the same thing. But his shizzle.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. He was shouldering the load so much that you know.
But Andrew Wiggins is back. Welcome back, Andrew Wiggins.
Speaking of, Andrew Wiggins is back.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I was, as I have done many times this year, I was on the verge of pronouncing the Warriors dead. I just watched them on the road, and look, Steph and Klay shot about as poorly as they will ever shoot in that Nuggets game the other night. But them losing to the Peyton Watson, I don't know if you remember this, but on draft night, you were already off the stream. But on draft night, when Peyton Watson was drafted, we were all like, in the first round? He averaged 3 points a game in college. Like,
I literally do not remember that man being drafted in the first round.
Like, he got drafted last pick by the Nuggets.
Do not remember that at all. At all.
So he got drafted on draft night, and we were so confused. We're like, but the idea behind him was that he was like a toolsy athletic wing who could provide some size. He was a really good high school player, didn't get the opportunity to play that much at UCLA. We were laughing at the pick because we were like, this has got to be terrible. And look, it is Mickey Mouse March / April. Maybe it was just a little bit Fugazi and he got some run because he, you know, the Nuggets are obviously, they weren't playing Jokic in that game and they have a bad bench as it is. But the Warriors, Steph got blocked by Watson twice down the stretch. The Warriors had every opportunity to hang in that game, and they lost to the Nuggets without Jokic. It was in Denver, but like they're 9-30 on the road this season. I was like so close to pronouncing them dead until we found out that Andrew Wiggins is now coming back. And from everything Hugo has explained to me, I don't want to get into the whole tiebreaker thing because it's just way too fucking confusing. But from everything Hugo's told me, the odds are that they're going to be in the sixth seed. Like, the way that the Lakers and the Clippers play each other down the stretch, the way that they essentially can almost control their own destiny to the sixth seed, which obviously you're going to prefer getting the sixth seed to having to play the Suns in the first round if you can avoid playing into the play-in. You're going to try to do that as much as possible. I'm kind of like, I just don't know what to do with this fucking team. Like I just am lost, and I gotta wait to see, but if they end up in the sixth seed, that's where things get interesting for me. If they end up in any other seed, I might be fading them, but if they end up in the sixth seed, I think that Kings Warriors matchup is going to be really, really interesting.
You got that totally backwards. the sixth seed is the one place they can't meet. You know why? Because they are going to run into the best team in the West, in the Sacramento Kings, who will demolish them in short order.
The end of the dynasty?
By the way, dropping kayfabe, I genuinely think the Kings are a bad matchup for the Warriors. Like, genuinely.
Why?
Because of Sabonis. What are they going to do with Sabonis?
What do you mean? Like,
how are they going to guard him?
I mean,
and the handoffs.
Like, the handoffs are definitely incredibly hard to guard, but if there's one team that understands the power of a handoff and how to guard it, it's probably the team that maximized this.
Well, they're good
Mike at Brown, it. Mike Brown took it from the Warriors. Like, they are, he was an assistant coach with them, and they essentially have utilized the movement shooting from Herter and Monk and all these guys in a way, and Fox running off screens.
So you just named three players that are good at shooting.
Yeah.
Who are the three players that are good at shooting that you're going to name on the Warriors? There's Steph Curry, and there's, I guess, Klay Thompson.
And then Poole, who is very up and down. I mean, to say that he's good at shooting is, like, he is, but he also has the worst shot selection I've ever seen. So, like, right now he's at 33% on the season. He shot 36% last year.
Yeah.
Like, he's an average three-point shooter on the whole. Maybe he'd be a better three-point shooter if he had better shot selection, but we know that's not the reality we live in.
I'm telling you what I'm seeing going into this. This is like the Vegas is going to open up with the line on it being like Warriors in five, because we can back. Like, that is what's going to happen. And I think everyone's going to be really surprised by what happens in that series. I very genuinely think, some people have said this, I'm finally willing to go on record. I think people are really sleeping on the Kings in a big way. The clutch numbers are insane. The road thing traveling well, I think the offense is insanely fucking good. And we are kind of in a new era in the NBA where we've seen teams make deep runs with really good offenses. Like you could say, oh, the Trae Young thing that was like fucked up. Like that was like a really broken East that year. Then what the fuck is the West this year? Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I think the Suns are probably the best bet to come out of the West, but I wouldn't be so sure the Warriors are sliding themselves into the bad part of it. I'm starting to really believe in the Kings, that the Kings are more dangerous than they're getting credit for.
Okay, so here's my counter back to that.
Yeah.
One team has Steph Curry. And we have seen get Steph to a playoff matchup. Now, the play-in is a one-game thing. That was a weird year. They didn't have Clay. The team, honestly, I think that statistically they're probably similar this year, but I just think that this team is better with Clay and Steph. And honestly, I think that they've gotten considerably better over the last 2 years, despite the fact that they can't win shit on the road this year. I just want to say, though, that, like, I'm looking, the hard part about diagnosing all of this shit in the West is that you can't take anything from the stats this year.
Yeah.
It's the first year that we're ever going to have where you can't say regular season precedent transfers to the playoffs, because the Suns have a different team because of the Kevin Durant trade. The Lakers revamped their roster, had a ton of guys missing. Kawhi and Paul George were out for most of the season. Paul George might be out again. The only teams that have had any sort of continuity are the top three teams. And even the Grizzlies missed Jaren Jackson Jr. for a large chunk and Ja Morant for a large chunk. So,
and
like,
Adams for a huge part of it. And now Brandon Clark's hurt. Like,
the Kings and the Nuggets have had the best injury luck, and they've had the most continuity of any team in the Western Conference this year.
And kind of. Sabonis broke his thumb and we all just kind of forgot because he's a fucking animal.
Well, he's playing through it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, yeah. But even all of these things considered, even with their shitty road record, even with all of that, even with all the question marks you might have about them defending, on the flip side, I think it's going to be way worse for the Kings. I think that offensively, I don't think that the Warriors are going to have what they have, the 12th rank offense in the NBA this year. It's better when Steph plays. But the Kings' defense is always going to be a massive issue in a playoff series to me. And if there's one team that you definitely don't want to play when you have massive defensive issues, it's the Steph Curry Warriors. They will exploit every single thing. What?
I just don't know. I don't know that is the magic of the Steph Curry Warriors exploiting bad defenses, or is the magic of Steph Curry Warriors exploiting good defenses?
Possibly,
you can only hit so many three. Like, if you hit a three against a set defense, or you hit a three with a fucking guy draped all over you, it still counts for 3 points.
Okay. When they have Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, it's only been 550 minutes so far this year.
They're amazing. They're so good. We've talked about that all year.
They have 122 offensive rating with an 111 defensive rating, which, honestly, all things considered, with the modern NBA, isn't like breaking records good, but it's like still really fucking good. And by the way, if you I'm interested to see if you take away the Wiseman minutes, what it looks like as well, because yeah. Wiseman played a lot of minutes for them early in the season. They've only played 161 minutes without Wiseman, which is the really hard part. They're a plus 16.7 in those minutes. They have a 127 offensive rating and a 110 defensive rating. Now, it's not big enough to really take a ton from it. They made 40% of their threes, which even with them, I don't think they're going to make 40% of their threes. They'll probably make more like 38% of their threes. But, yeah. Like, I just think that the Wiggins element is the one element that changes things for me. Because yeah. The worst part of this entire team all season has been point of attack defense, and you just added a top 10 wing defender in the NBA. Pop him right in. He's already played with everyone. You basically have the same top six guys from your rotation last year with the starters when you put Looney as a starter, and then you bring Gary Payton II off the bench. You need to figure out, for a playoff series, you need to figure out 2 to 3 guys that you trust that you think can be playable. Now, I don't really think that there's anyone that is going to be like completely like, I think DiVincenzo can probably hang in this series. Maybe he's a little bit redundant with what the other guys bring to the table. But I think he can hang in this series. I think you could even make the argument Kuminga could hang in this series. There's certainly slim pickings, and if they get an injury, they might be fucked. Like, if anyone gets hurt on the Warriors, they might be fucked. Just even like Kayvon Looney getting hurt, they might be cooked, right? No. But I'm going to trust the fact that these guys already have continuity, the fact that these guys, when they do play together, they're still amazing. They've just had very limited minutes playing together. And I think that we need to throw all the statistical shit out the window for this playoffs in terms of the regular season, because the Kings' health luck has been crazy and the Warriors' health luck has been almost as bad as it can possibly be. And maybe it is just that year, like when the Lakers won the title, and then the next year they lost a few key role players. Really only one key role player in Danny Green, but like they lost a few key guys, and they lost Danny Green and Dwight Howard actually to the Sixers. But
no, the season was normal.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah,
that was a huge change too.
Yeah, it, totally regular. But at the same time, they were the 7 seed going into that matchup. They got they also had bad injury luck, but like they just didn't really have it going that year. This happens with defending champions a lot. They burn themselves out, but if we can get 4 or 5 games here from Wiggins at the end of the year and they avoid the play-in and they play Sacramento in the first round, I feel confident in their two-way ability in a way that I just don't feel confident about Sacramento's defense, that I think that a team can just exploit in a playoff matchup.
I'm starting to think that if that's the matchup, I think that's two of the best three teams in the West playing each other.
What's that?
I think that's two of the three best teams in the West playing.
Man, you're really high on the Kings right
now. I'm declaring it full throated now. I'm in on the Kings. I just think people are dismissing them like a little. People are being a little too glib about the Kings. Like I think they need to be taken like very seriously. The fact that they went on the road with that offense, it means something. I genuinely think that like means something. I get what you're saying that like, statistically, it doesn't really mean anything, but I also think that like when we're talking about the Warriors, I think what made the Warriors special was that they were impervious to great defense. It wasn't necessarily that they were
I just think if you put a bad defense up against them, which the Kings are, all things considered, yeah, it could get ugly. Like, look, yes, those games could be incredibly high scoring and maybe they just win in a shootout, but like, if I'm going into a shootout, I want Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on my side. And I'm not doubting that the Kings don't have a ton of offensive firepower, maybe 1 through 8 there. And I also totally disagree with what Will saying there that the, AD, LeBron, and Reeves have a plus 21 net rating. It's an overrated stat. Well, I just looked up what Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, and Kevon Looney, and it's a plus 23.6 with 132 offensive rating. Like, they're incredible in the 330 minutes that they've played together this year. And not only are they incredible, but we know that they can win in the playoffs. And by the way, everyone considers the Lakers a contender now because of the stat you just said to me. It's like, the best teams have lineups that they can go to that are plus 18, plus 20, plus 22, because they're just running through teams whenever they are all healthy. And they're and we've seen it from the Warriors in the past in a way that I'm going to trust, even with all the weird shit that's happened this year.
I want to be clear. I'm not saying the Warriors are bad. I'm just saying the Kings are like...
They're very good.
They're good. Is more what I'm saying. And I do think that they are uniquely positioned. I think this matchup is worse than people might think. I think it's a worse matchup for the Warriors than people think.
And until that Celtics game, they really had competed with some really good teams. They really did impress me with. I'm trying not to sell it short because I do believe that you have to have regular season success. But at the same time, like, I do think that there might be, like, I don't want to call them effort merchants because they're a good team, but, like, the playoff effort is a different level when you're getting to some of these veteran teams that have been there before, they've proven it before, and the Sacramento Kings are there for the first time, and that level of effort and energy that they bring on an every night basis might go out the window a little bit. And, like, look, maybe there are some lineups for the Kings that are incredible, but their starters in 862 minutes are a plus 0.7.
Okay. I'm just saying, Doubt smooth catch at your own risk. Remember who we all gave Trae Young credit for that Hawks run? Remember who was also on that team?
Kevin Huerter. Kayvon is, yes. Oh, Will, thank you for bringing up the fact that Dinwiddie, Bridges, Johnson, O'Neal, and Finney Smith is a plus 32. You told me the other day that you played that in one game. So, great.
I appreciate Will fighting the good fight here.
Thank you.
We will discredit the Warriors. Now, I said before the year that I'm never writing off the Warriors. But I just do think that...
It feels different. It doesn't feel like a championship team. It doesn't even feel like a win the West team, but it certainly feels like winning a series against a flawed team would not be out of the question to me.
I'm the Nuggets. I don't believe in the Nuggets, but I also concede like the Nuggets can kind of win it. Like if you told me the Nuggets won a series, I'd be like, yeah, probably what Murray got hot. Like they have
won a series.
Like they'd be like beat the Suns or something.
Okay, gotcha. Like, they're definitely gonna win a series.
Well.
Well, who's gonna be the 8 seed? The Pelicans? Like, I mean, like I think they beat the Pelicans.
I think the Pelicans are baby food. Like, yeah. The Lakers, the Lakers could give them trouble. Like,
yeah.
I like really. Like again, and you know, when A Disney hurts himself during shoot around in like game 6 or whatever, like that you know.
Yeah.
Because that's the real thing limiting the Lakers is that they just can't stop being injured. So,
and also I think that part of them is going to do, I actually have been talking about this a little bit. I think that they're kind of be the Celtics of last year in that they're going to be like, we're not afraid of the Suns. We're not afraid of the Nets. And that's actually could be detrimental to their chances because I don't know if I'm picking them in a Suns series. Like, I think that they're going to try to win out, and they'll probably end up playing the Suns in the first round. And that automatically becomes, like, one of the best series imaginable in this in a first round. Like, that would probably be the best first round series we've gotten in years. But at the same...
You'd have to go back to, like, Clippers-Spurs. It's like...
When you have, like, that many, like, historical players in one series. Hold on one second. I'm just pulling up the net rating of the... I'm pulling up the net rating of the Warriors starters from last playoffs right now. Give me one second because Will doesn't believe that the regular season stuff matters. So Hold on. Let me pull this
Will,
up.
Will has gotten it. He has gotten it. Normally, Will rattles me mid pod.
No, this is why I'm like, it matters, because they have won a championship literally last year with this team. Like, it's not like this is a new team that we assembled out of thin air. They've played back-to-back seasons to get, like, they've played, like, this general core has basically been together for 3 years at least with Clayton. The whole core going back almost a decade. Like, there is precedent for this team winning at the highest levels. Hold on. Let me see. With their starters last year, I'm just curious to see what their net rating was in the playoffs, which was a plus 18.8 in 172 minutes in the playoffs, their starters were last year. So keep that in mind. just a point that matters. Yeah, the bench is ass, but when you get to the playoffs, bench doesn't matter as much if you shorten your rotations. Will Steve Kerr do that? Maybe not. If Steve Kerr doesn't do it, then they might be fucked. But if they can shorten their rotations to 8 players from the first round, then I'll believe in them.
Yeah. I think, I welcome the Great Midwest getting like another good team. Because I do think Wiggins coming back does give them another real bona fide playoff team.
Yes.
I think this expands the list of teams that I think can like genuinely win the West to 5 now.
So we're going to go Nuggets, Suns, Lakers, Warriors, Kings for you.
Kings. Yeah.
So you think the Kings have a better chance than the Grizzlies?
Yes. I think the Kings have a better chance than the Grizzlies. I don't know if they've got a better chance. The Lakers have a better chance, though. Maybe 5 is too many. Maybe 4. I don't know if I'd put the Lakers on that list. I think the Lakers could beat anyone, but I just don't think they can
stay healthy
for 3. Yeah, for 3. Winning a series versus winning 3 is like very different.
Yes. Right? I agree with that. Yeah. Okay.
So.
Anything else you want to say?
Yeah, no Jaylen Brown tonight.
Oh, he's not playing?
Yeah. So.
Fuck.
Yeah.
No, I know. The more players out for the Celtics, the more I'm annoyed. Not because it's because every time we play you guys without, like, oh, we're missing 3 starters and you beat us. I'm like, what the fuck? I feel like the games are more competitive when we are full strength.
Yeah, no. The Celtics are weirdly like when they took the Bucks to double OT with like just their match.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like no, our I will say our bench guys like do pretty well generally. Yeah, I'm gonna go try and find a bar to watch that game. Hey, if you want to Hinkley me, you know, come find around Brooklyn. You'll probably find me at some point.
Let's go.
Approach me on the street, and we
will. Will does live in New York, so.
Yeah, Will, this is your chance. He's cross-referencing the hotel background to figure out the cross streets. Is that BQE in the background? All right, I'm going to cross-reference all hotels off the BQE. All right, peace. All right. All right, guys.